Okay, welcome to part two of this episode for the Rational Faiths podcast. I'm Brian Kissel, and we are continuing this conversation or this interview that I did with Kirk Cottle about like 7 months ago. So first of all, Kirk, I want to just apologize for taking so long in getting that episode out and published. So as I said, we had this conversation about 7 months ago. And there are a lot of different reasons why it took so long. I mean, one was just busy and getting the time to edit it. But another was it was in the beginning and I didn't really have very much experience in doing interviews. So the audio quality of my voice isn't that great. But the content was really interesting and I wanted to publish it. But then on the other hand, you have been going through some different developments and some changes in your own faith journey. So I thought it would be really interesting to be able to kind of continue this conversation and get a little bit of a follow-up for you to tell more about your story. So Kirk, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast.
Thanks for having me back, Brian. I definitely appreciate it. And let me preface for any listeners out there, two things. Number one, as a general rule, I always like to tell people, don't hold me to anything that I said more than 6 months ago. And number two, during part one of the interview, I personally don't remember anything that I said during that time. So if I repeat something, that's just because I might not have remembered what I already said. And if I contradict myself, that's fine. I contradict myself all of the time in real life. So there you go.
Wonderful. So let's go ahead and start a little bit where we left off. So we left off, you were working for BYU Idaho and teaching online classes and were what appeared you were enjoying it and having a good experience. So let's go ahead and go off from there.
Yeah. So let me reiterate that I love teaching. Teaching is my passion. I loved being at BYU Idaho. It was great. Unfortunately, BYU Idaho and I have had to part ways. And a reason for that is because, for lack of a better term, we didn't see eye to eye with things. As an online instructor, we're required to have an hour office hour every week. And during those office hours, I have a virtual office, and so students can come in and we have audio visual capabilities, so I can be on webcam and mic, and they can too if they so choose to do so. And what we do during that time is I'll generally answer general questions about the course, but more often than that, I will talk about supplementary material to the class. So a lot of students just may be in a class because they're required to be in a class, or they find it interesting, but you know, they just want to do the required work. Now, some students hear things and they want to kind of go above and beyond the class material, and so I don't bog down the other students. I'll usually invite people to my office hours.
Right.
And we can talk about something further. This was kind of the case for this particular time. We were studying the first presidency, and the question came about, did the church always choose the prophet the same way? And I said, pretty much, except for the time between Joseph Smith and Brigham Young. And I invited students to come to my office hours at this time to hear a little lecture and Q&A period over the secession crisis, what we call the secession crisis, the time between Joseph Smith and Brigham Young. And I talked for students about 45 minutes to an hour about that situation, what's kind of going in Nauvoo and how polygamy played into the choice between Brigham Young and everyone else. And I thought it went well. This is generally why students like me. My student reviews were always very high, much, much above average of other religious instructors online. And there was one student who complained about the lecture, who thought it was anti-Mormon, who thought I was trying to lead students away, which is totally false. Nothing I said was historically inaccurate. In fact, I had multiple students asking me when I'm going to do another lecture, and I had multiple students that told me they really enjoyed it.
This was going on during your office hours, right?
Yes, and this is going on during my office hours. So generally when I would do something like this, I'll send out an email because, again, it comes up from some kind of student question that probably wouldn't be appropriate to kind of throw into the main course because people just wouldn't be that interested, and it's not in the predetermined curriculum of BYUI. They have a really tight noose on you as far as what you can kind of officially teach in a course because it goes by a student manual, and so the tests and the writings and everything like that is predetermined. So as an instructor, to actually teach, you kind of got to go outside of actual class times and do that over the phone or do it during office hours or something like that.
Interesting. In the manuals that they're using, are they okay materials and stuff, or are they, is it kind of difficult to teach the materials with those resources?
It's a good question because the manuals don't actually allow you as an instructor much to teach. They're kind of like institute manuals. In fact, I think they're almost the exact same, if not the same, as a manual you find in an institute. So where you interact with students the most and where I enjoyed the most is discussion boards. So a lot of times students would read and we could have discussions over discussion boards. And that was always the case during scripture courses that I always taught. This last time I was teaching some sections in Teachings of the Living Prophet. And for that one, BYUI actually doesn't have a required discussion board. And so as an instructor, you really don't have much of a voice in the class at all, unless you really try to make one yourself and try to really go after and interact with students on your own terms. And for teaching, that's my favorite thing to do, is interact with students, because that's my passion. I love people and I love talking to them.
Okay, so this guy, this student tells on you. So what happens with that?
This is actually through the Pathway program. So if anyone out there isn't familiar with the Pathway program, it's people can basically take classes from BYU Idaho for a year, and if they have a certain GPA, they can then get into regular programs at BYU Idaho. It's actually an excellent program. I give a ringing endorsement to anyone that's listening out there. It's really affordable, and it's a great way to get your education. With that said, Pathway students actually have to meet, I believe it's every Thursday night, up at their local church building. And I'm not really sure exactly what they do at these meetings because I'm not involved on that end of things, but they meet with missionaries in kind of a devotional kind of classroom there. So this person who turned me in, who let me know he turned me in, he went and talked to these couple missionaries. He called me on the phone multiple times and told me that many students had a problem with what I was saying. There's, I believe, like 5-6 students actually in this person's group meeting on Thursday nights. And he said, Brother Cottle is teaching false doctrine. And he said, you know, these couple missionaries, they agree with me and all of these kind of things. So one particular student that I have a pretty good rapport with, he named her name. And so I was shocked that she had like a negative experience. So I called her and I said, look, this is, you know, because of confidentiality reasons, like, I'm not going to give somebody's name, but I've heard that you might have been offended by things that I said. And she goes, no, your lectures are always great, and, you know, they're thought-provoking, but they're not unfaithful at all. And so, basically, I had this student, for lack of a better term, lying and spreading rumors about me. And so, I ended up having a meeting with people at the university. Now, the people that I had a meeting with, first off, at BYU Idaho, we're in what's called teaching groups. So we're in small groups together as instructors, and you have somebody over you called the teaching group leader. My teaching group leader emailed me, said there was a complaint about me. I was surprised, but she said, don't worry about it. Nothing will become of this. And so I said, okay, this was right at the beginning of the semester. So really nothing else goes on with it. I just kind of go on teaching as usual. Then about 5 weeks later, it's about midway through the semester, I get called, or emailed rather, contacted by the head of online learning, and I have a meeting with the head of online learning and the chair of the religious education department, and I believe there's a third person. I'm not for sure, but I think there was. I can't recall who that person was, though. So we have a phone interview, which is about 45 minutes long, and I was basically told during that interview that what I said wasn't faith-promoting and that they didn't appreciate the tone of what I was saying, and that they were ready to actually fire me on the spot. That's almost a direct quote. They said, we were going to fire you on the spot, if not for somebody local here that they called and talked to that kind of vouched for me for being a decent person. And they also said that if they were to let me go on the spot, they would have to contact my stake president for any further discipline. And that really surprised me, because I asked what I said that was so disturbing, and they didn't like that I said the transformation of Brigham Young might not be entirely historically accurate. And they didn't like that I answered a question about when Joseph Smith first encountered polygamy. So I mentioned the Fanny situation with students, and they didn't really appreciate that. But I asked specifically what was false, and they said they sent my lecture that was recorded by me. I recorded the lecture because I'm not ashamed of anything in it. And so I always record my lectures so students can watch them later on. And they said they sent my lectures to multiple historians on campus at BYUI, and they admitted to me that there was nothing false in the lecture, but that it just came down to they didn't like my tone. And they hadn't received any other students' complaint other than this one person's. And I have multiple emails myself of and student reviews of people saying that they loved it and that they find it faith-promoting.
Man, and this kind of stuff is just so bizarre. I have this little story that I tell every once in a while where my dad went to his boss, who happened to be in a stake presidency, and he was kind of asking some questions and asking about like Elijah Abels and saying, so Joseph Smith, he ordained some black people, and the response from this leader was like, wherever you heard that, that is just a lie. And not only is it a lie, that you are walking down dangerous paths, and you're on a slippery slope on your way out if you're asking these kind of questions and stuff. It's like this bizarre thing where we can't handle history or handle hearing something, man, like in that you were saying it. The problem was with your tone or whatever. It's very strange.
And I want to throw in what's interesting is the timing of all of this, because perhaps this is just me looking into things too much, or perhaps this is just me being paranoid or making myself too big of a deal, which I don't think I am that big of a deal, honestly. But my teaching group leader told me, you know, don't worry about this. This happens every now and again, but basically nothing's wrong. But I'm not contacted until 5 weeks later by the university, and I'm contacted exactly 1 and 2 days before I see Kate Kelly and John DeLynn receive these letters, and online I start seeing all of these people contacted. And so I only let a couple close friends know about this, and I don't go public or anything because I want to keep my job and whatnot, so I don't want to create a big stir at that point. But the whole time I'm thinking, this is just really strange timing, because everybody's being talked to all of a sudden by leaders within kind of this 1 week span. So if the university wanted to talk to me and they're aware, I can't figure out why else they would wait like a month after the fact.
What came from that then? So they talked to you, said that they were going to fire you. So you're like put on probation or something, or?
Yeah. So it's interesting, because it wasn't at all when they were talking to me like a job thing at all. I felt like I was in a disciplinary council. There was a lot of talk about, you know, we prayed about this, we feel moved to do blank. A lot of this kind of leader speak.
Yeah.
They said they would fire me on the spot, if not at the very end of the conversation. They said, the reason we don't is because we feel by talking to you that you are humble and you have a repentant spirit and these sorts of things. So they're going to let me finish out the semester. Now, when you work as an adjunct like I do,
you receive a contract semester by semester. And because it's halfway through the semester, I think that they didn't want to fire me because, well, somebody's probably got to take my classes and whatnot. And there's probably a variety of reasons. And because I said I'd play ball and I was nice and I wanted the best for my students, and that wasn't a lie. I wanted the best for my students. I still taught as normal, but they said they were going to watch me very closely, and they didn't want me basically interacting with students anymore. So I no longer answered questions during office hours. I cut down my phone calls with students. I only answered questions from then on about, due dates or people that had emergencies and needed, clarity on assignments. But I didn't get into anything theology or historical-wise with anybody. And at the end of this, and basically they just weren't going to renew my contract. And so I quit before that. Hmm. So I feel like I was really kind of pushed out. And with this, although they admitted that there's nothing false that I said in the lecture, one of the conditions of me staying is that I needed to write a letter addressing some of the issues that I talked about in this lecture and email them to all my students with official resources. I was told nothing should be taught, even in an office hour or a regular conversation with a student, that doesn't come either from a student manual, perhaps LDS.org, or a recent general conference address. So I can't really use any outside resources. So I was asked to address some of the things that I talked about from a faithful perspective using those things. And of course, that's kind of hard to do with some issues. So I did my best, and I found some decent things on LDS.org with some of their new articles on polygamy and whatnot that I connected. And one site that is by a prominent, I won't throw out the site name, but I think it's a pretty good site with polygamy done by a faithful LDS temple recommend holding person. I thought it would be a great resource for students to look at, and I was told that although it looks like the person's faithful, it's not appropriate for students to be looking at the primary documents of these things. They should be looking at what the prophets and the apostles say about these things.
So let me clarify really, really quick. So this is like was this for the religion department, or are these devotional classes that you're teaching, or are these actually the history classes?
They're more devotional in nature. For sure. I mean, I was told, this is almost an exact quote, or as much as I can remember, but I was told, we're not trying to create scholars here. We are, or historians, we're trying to create disciples of Jesus Christ. And I think that's really the difference between what the university was trying to do and what I'm trying to do. Is not that I'm not trying to make disciples. I just think we can do both at once. I think we can give people actual information and teach and have honest discussion, and people can still build the kingdom and still can be disciples of Jesus Christ. So like in the Teachings of the Living Prophets class, each week students would read a biography or, these kind of little biographical sketches of a couple apostles, the current ones and these things, and past prophets. And they would have to write something on him. And so inevitably, when people were reading about Joseph Smith or Brigham Young, they might have a question about it, about who they were. And I just try to do my best to answer that question. Like I was saying, if somebody said, if a lesson's about the succession of presidency, in the manual, they talk a little about what happened between Joseph and Brigham. And I just kind of filled in gaps for interested parties. And apparently that was not okay. And that's curious to me. Nothing's malicious. I'm not trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes. And I honestly didn't know there would be a problem with that, because I was told during office hours, the reason they're there is to interact with students. But apparently I was interacting with them in the wrong way.
So you go ahead and quit before your contract goes up or whatever. So what happens from there?
From there, I start really having a hard time. I've questioned things for quite a while on my end of things as far as the institutional church goes, but I've always felt like I've had a lot to give for teaching. Teaching has always been my lifeline to the church. I love, like I say, I love teaching, and I still profess a strong testimony of Joseph Smith and the Book of Mormon and Jesus Christ. Those are the three things I've always really espoused. And I've always had problems with the institution a lot because of politics and being run by revelation and whatnot. My local leaders, although I get along with them great personally, and I have an excellent, excellent bishop, so I don't want anything I say about my bishop to reflect negatively on him as a person, because I consider him a friend and I think he's a very good guy. With that said, my local leaders haven't, despite my asking, haven't given me a calling in years. And, you know, that's been very hard for me, because I've always taught and that's kind of the way I've connected to people, but I felt very disconnected from the community, although even with asking and saying, look, I'd like to be more involved. I go to church every week. I'm the guy that wears a suit and shakes people's hands. I have a good family. We're always there. And I just started to become disenchanted with how things were going. And this BYU situation kind of became the last straw for me, because I was like, I feel like I can't be involved in my local board and stake. And then I feel like I can't, well, not just that I feel like I can't, but because the way things ended at BYU Idaho, now I can never teach at church schools or institutes or anything again. So I feel like all of a sudden I have no place. The only thing I've ever been is a teacher, and that's my connection to the gospel. And so throughout the years, I've really lost a testimony of the church as an institution as it stands in the 21st century, and that the church is being run by revelation. Now, with that said, I don't think that the brethren are trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes. I don't think they're malicious people. But do I think that President Monson literally talks to God face to face today? No, I don't. I've lost my testimony of that. And that the local leadership in most wards are being led by God. I think the church is made up of really good people doing mostly really good things. But I think at the end of the day, that's what the church is at this point, is a lot of people, good people, doing the best they can with what they've got. And I think sometimes we get it wrong.
So go ahead and lead us up to where you decide that you're wanting to kind of step away.
So the moment that I really decide I'm going to officially step away is after this meeting with these people at BYU. So I think I had about 6 weeks left in the semester, and it really was the last straw for me, but I wasn't just going to quit on the spot. I was like, this would be a big thing. So I talked to my wife and I said, I'm going to give it till the end of the semester, because number one, I should think about it for a while, and I should talk to some people about it before I do. And I should also hang around, because it wouldn't be fair to my students. I mean, first and foremost, they're always going to be the ones that I'm worried about if I'm teaching. So I don't want to kind of let them know what's going on, and I don't want it to negatively affect these people's academic journeys or anything with degrees or whatnot. So there's no reason they should lose me. So I waited till the semester, and I took care of all my students and final grades, and mailed a letter to Salt Lake, and mailed the same letter to my bishop and stake president with my resignation. And it's something, you know, I say that was probably in the back of my head for a couple years, but again, because I feel like I've had much to give, that I stayed. And I always believed that there was a place in the church for everybody. And now the thing that I've really come to believe is that the gospel of Jesus Christ is for everyone, but the church isn't necessarily for everyone. I don't feel like the church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints as it stands now is inclusive enough for everybody. I wish it were, but I don't feel like it is. And when you're a semi-public figure, again, I don't want to make myself bigger or more important than I am, but when you're a semi-public figure like myself, being on a popular podcast, of course, you know, I do the Mormon book review. And when you work at a church school like myself, when you publish things like myself, the things that you do are under a microscope. And everything you say, you're always worried that the wrong person is going to hear it, that you're going to lose your job or there's going to be some kind of discipline. You know, we've all been in church when, assuming the people listening to this are LDS, and if you're not, you can take my word for it. But we've all been in wards where you just have some guy sitting in gospel doctrine, and every week he's saying something wacky, or elders quorum, right? Somebody can say, I think we should pray to Heavenly Mother. I'm not saying this is wacky. I'm just saying that's outside of Orthodox Mormonism. Something more wacky would be maybe sometimes it's okay to pray to Satan. But if somebody's to say that, we just say, whatever, that guy's just sitting in the back of the class. He always says wacky things. Who cares? Put something on Facebook. Who cares? But when you're a more semi-public face, the church is much more worried about what you're doing. So when I put something on Facebook, even if I say I'm not speaking for the university, or even if I say I'm not speaking for the church, I always am in a way. And I'm not just saying this for me, but I'm saying this for anyone that works at an institute or BYU or has a job that requires a temple recommend that works for the church, or people that don't work for the church and are just more public faces. So let me go back to somebody like Kate Kelly. It's not what Kate Kelly says is the problem, I don't believe. I believe the problem is that she's so public, because a lot of people believe what Kate Kelly believes and puts it on Facebook, but not everybody's in the New York Times as the face of it. And so I think the church is uncomfortable with something that says Mormon women are seeking priesthood. I think the headline reads much better when it says ex-Mormon women seeking priesthood, or excommunicated Mormon women seeking priesthood. That's much different when people hear it, because one sounds like it's people fighting from within, and the other makes it sounds like a bunch of apostates that want something. And I think the church is very uncomfortable with the first of those. And I think rightly so, in a way. Because when you hold a temple recommend, that says something about you, whether you admit things or not. There are certain things one could assume about you. So, for example, teaching at BYU Idaho, I needed a temple recommend. I needed it for my job. I didn't necessarily – I'm not doing anything morally wrong, I don't believe. But, you know, do I always sustain the brother in these things? No. And a lot because of this, I wasn't going to the temple. But – I feel like I was touching people's lives in a positive way. But at the same time, I kind of felt a little disingenuous, because just by me holding a recommend would say something about me, right? I mean, you could assume things about me that maybe weren't necessarily true. So I had talks with a lot of friends, you know, including some that are in leadership positions, that would say, well, we have to weigh this out. Is it better that you have a recommend, even though you can't honestly answer all the questions and touch the lives positively of 100 people? Or is it better that you don't have a recommend and destroy the faith of people? And I always took that question very seriously. And so a lot of Mormons would say, well, of course you shouldn't have a recommend if you don't really believe or something, right? Because that would be deceitful. Okay. So then I went one step lower and said, just by virtue of being LDS, just by virtue of having your name on the list, when you speak, you're always kind of speaking in the name of the church. And you, again, there's unspoken things. If I just walk in a room and say I'm Mormon, there's unspoken things that might say, oh, this guy doesn't drink alcohol. Oh, this person believes there's prophets on the earth. Stuff like that, right? And I feel like believing in modern prophets is very essential to being a part of the institution. And I felt once I lost that, even though I love the church and I have nothing negative to say about the church, I feel like once that I lost through my experiences the belief that
Jesus Christ is running the church, I felt like in good conscience I couldn't stay anymore. And that for me to continue to have my name on the records would be disingenuous and lying to people in a way.
I'd like to go back a little bit because kind of as you were saying, I think a lot of people have been surprised. I mean, if you look at that interview that we did that our listeners had just barely listened to, I think you're in that interview, you're providing, I think, a very compelling demonstration of this faith. And I think a lot of these different questions and a lot of these different problems that you're talking about, I think you were obviously aware of them at that time. And you were talking about, I think, some of these very interesting ways to kind of deal with these difficulties and paradoxes and things that go on being in this kind of a church. So why now? Or would you say this has just kind of been something that you've been thinking about for a long time? Or like why, I guess, is there more to that? Is it kind of this build up of all of these different things, or, and then that meeting with these leaders, that was kind of like the straw breaking the back? Or maybe talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So I think a lot of it comes down to my situation kind of being unique in the way of that I'm semi-public again. And so
yeah,
when I say and do things, again, a lot of times it's under a microscope of local leadership and maybe at sometimes Salt Lake or my employer, which would be BYUI. And so when my membership was threatened at all, I just can't. I feel like I basically was pushed out, and I feel like I beat them to the punch.
Yeah.
In fact, 2 days after I announced my resignation, I received a phone call from BYU Idaho, and I'd never received a phone call. It's always through email. And it was, "We need to talk to you ASAP." So I sent them an email back and said basically my situation, that I was resigning from the church and I'd no longer be teaching there. And I got back a 2-line response that basically said, "Okay, thanks for reaching out this semester. Sorry to lose you," or something. But nothing like, let's talk this out or anything like that. Now, what I postulate is two things. Number one is that they heard about something from one of these various blogs or something that I've talked about me. Or number two, which I think is more likely, is that they were calling to fire me and push forward the situation. And the last thing I wanted was any kind of church council or to go through any of this stuff. So I feel like a lot of this was preemptive. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as staying in the church, I hold true to most of the things that I say. I think if you're just a regular member, like probably 95% of people, I put my wife in this category. She has a hard time with a lot of things, but can go. Because if you're not a semi-public figure, generally nobody's going to give you any guff about anything that you say, right? Like at my example of the guy that sits in the back of Gospel Doctrine that just kind of says whatever. The church isn't going to give you any problem. And so the church, I think, is all about community and feeling a part of that community. And I think there's a lot of ways to still continue to do that as long as the church isn't pushing or prodding or poking at you. And again, I don't feel like it does that to many people unless you're really in a position for them to do that to you. But the vast majority of people, I think, can stay in the church just fine as long as they find a community that fits them, regardless of what they believe.
How has this been with your wife? Maybe tell me a little bit about her and how she's taking this decision. Is she still active, or?
Yeah, and in fact, I'm still active. So let me put that on the table. I love the church. A week after I did this, I went to church with my family. Perhaps that surprises some people.
Yeah, I've never heard of that. That's interesting.
But again, I don't know where else to go. I have nowhere else to go because of my testimony in the Book of Mormon and Joseph Smith. I mean, I think a lot was lost between Joseph and Brigham, but again, I think there's a lot good about the church. I feel like the church just doesn't want me, but I want it. I don't know really how to function without it. My wife has a lot of issues, a lot of the same issues I have, but she's not planning on officially leaving. We like raising our kids in the church. Of course, my kids know what I think. You know, they're my Facebook friends even, but I talk to them personally. And if they get to be older, my oldest is 13, my youngest is 6, but if they become closer to adults and, you know, they find that there's a different course for them, then that's fine. But as it is now, we still go to church as a family. Nothing really changes for me. It's just now I can pretty much speak freely without fear of ramifications and fear of people saying, like when I post things on a Facebook or I say something and people saying, well, you can't say that because you're a member of the church. I feel much freer and I feel much more authentic at this time because, again, in good faith, I feel like I can't have my name connected with the church officially because I can't stand up and say I think the church is led by prophets and apostles, but I can stand up on testimony meeting and say I believe Joseph Smith is a prophet and the Book of Mormon is true. And so, yeah. I feel like I still love the church, and I feel like being Mormon is a lot like being Jewish. It's more than a religion. It's an entire culture. It's an entire social construct. And I feel I'm still very much Mormon. I just feel like I'm kind of not Latter-day Saint.
Very interesting. So are you still planning on attending for a while? Or
yeah, I'm planning on attending. And in fact, if they ask me to help with a ward activity or something like that, I'd definitely do it. I have nothing against my people in my ward. I'm not leaving because I've been offended or hurt, although both of those have definitely happened. But that's not my decision. My decision is spiritual and intellectual, and it's academic, and it's all of these things. But at the end of the day, I feel that it's honest. And I feel like as a member of the church, to have that label placed upon you means, and I think a lot of Mormons would agree with this, of that you follow the prophet. The church is about obedience when it comes down to it. We hear it every week at church, is that we sing the song as a child, follow the prophet. It's all about obedience. And so I've been very vocal and that I disagree with the church's stance on gay rights. I don't think it's a sin to be homosexual. And again, somebody in my position being at BYU Idaho to publicly say that is not okay. It's not okay with your job, but at some point, it might not be okay with your membership if you're too vocal. Now, again, as a regular member, you can probably say whatever you want, but in somebody in my position, it can become like very negative towards you. I'm not necessarily a supporter of the ordained women movement, but I do sympathize with it. I do think women doctrinally should probably have priesthood, or at the very least, we should be having the conversation. But my point is there's various things that I just openly disagree with the church on, and I find it disingenuous to be a member if I don't agree with those people, if I don't agree with those things. Because the church itself, if you listen to general conference talks, are telling people like me, look, you've got to listen to the modern prophet. We're being inspired, and you've got to listen to us. So I feel like there's not a place for me a lot of times to teach at a local level, and then at an institutional level with the church employment, I'm not there. And then when I go to get comfort from general conference, a lot of times I just feel marginalized. And I know I'm not alone in that. I hear a lot of talks from people like Elder Oaks that I feel like marginalized people like me and many minorities.
And I don't know if it is only kind of this Mormon LDS kind of a culture thing. And I think it is strong within us. But I'm worried that we're always going to have some of these kind of expectations and some of these other things, and maybe you're trading, we're trading different labels, you know. So now you're going to be the guy who left versus being who's coming versus just being a member of the church who may have different views anyway. So I guess I'm kind of confused how that would make it better, you know, how that would make you feel more free.
Yeah, it just makes me feel more free, number one, because I don't feel like there's a threat of my membership over my head.
Yeah.
All of the time, and now I feel like there is. And number two, like
it
I said,
gives you the power in it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm fine with the ramifications of that.
Yeah.
And number two, I feel like I just don't believe all the modern Mormon doctrine of prophets. And again, I feel like believing there's a modern prophet on the earth is essential to modern Mormonism. Again, I feel like it would be disingenuous of someone to have their name on the records of the church and profess there's prophets on the earth if they don't really believe that.
Interesting.
Because again, I think if I don't really think that's that controversial a view. I mean, I think if you ask your average Mormon who's sitting on a pew, if somebody wanted to get baptized in the church, and they said this person wants to get baptized, but he doesn't believe President Monson is a prophet, how many people do you think would say that person should get baptized? I don't think very many, even if they believed in the Book of Mormon. And so I think we should carry that same logic to staying in the church.
Like those reactions that were going against you at BYU Idaho or some of these other experiences, those are wrong. You know, why does that have to be Mormon? Why can't we kind of reclaim that? And I'm in an Elder's Quorum presidency, and I don't know. I definitely agree that it depends where you are and depends on what kind of ways that people are looking at you. But I want you to be able to belong, right? You know, I want or to be able to have a voice and have all of these different perspectives, and it just, I don't know, it's really sad to me. Not that you've left or anything like that, because I absolutely support you. It totally makes sense to me, but it's like I wish that didn't need to be that way. I wish there could be room for people teaching history, you know, or talking about facts and talking about some of these different things. So
I agree with you. And this is why, you know, I say I feel the gospel is for everyone, but the church isn't for everyone, regrettably, because I feel like the church just isn't inclusive enough in general for our LGBT brothers and sisters to ever truly fit. Now, are there LGBT Mormons? Yeah, of course. Are there active ones? Yes. But are they truly accepted as who they are in the church? I don't believe so. I believe that they have to make a lot of concessions to be quote-unquote good members to continue to go on. And I think this is the same with more liberal politically minded members. You just have to kind of keep quiet. You know, if once I heard a high councilman in my ward, he came and talked, and he said something that I thought was really funny at the time, because I think it really kind of puts in perspective what we believe in the church. I think it was like a 4th of July talk, but he said there's really two great Americans in the history of this country, Joseph Smith and Ronald Reagan. And I felt like, in a nutshell, this shows what's acceptable in the church and the institution. I'm sure nobody talked to him from that. You know, and I'm sure the vast majority of the congregation is going to agree with that. But I don't think it goes over so well, even in a more liberal place like Portland, Oregon, where I am. Mm-hmm. I don't think it goes over so well if I stand up and I say, I think there's two great Americans, Joseph Smith and Bill Clinton. You know, like if a stake president or a bishop hears that, like that's not going to go over so well. They're going to say, you know, you're talking about politics or these kind of things, right? And so my point with that is saying, can the one who thinks Bill Clinton is great, can he still be in the church? Sure. But can he voice his opinion? No. And if he wants in a, and if he wants to find a place in the church, he has to go on a Facebook group or go to a member's house with 10 other people. And you really have to go out of your way to literally create your own community. So I feel like LGBT people, more liberally, politically minded people, people that would like women to have priesthood, all of these little kind of subgroups. Sunstone's a good example, is that people actually have to create their own, and those groups aren't accepted by the institution. They're tolerated by the institution, sure, but actually sometimes in General Conference are actually attacked. And so the members come back that are in these groups of saying, well, you know, we're still all right, and we're creating our own Mormon space, and we sustain leaders. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure that you do, because if you say that women should have priesthood and you say that publicly, or if you think homosexual people should be able to legally be married, I don't know if there's a way of getting around that. You're in open opposition to the church. You're in open opposition against the prophet. And I don't think that's really an opinion. I think that's a fact. And I'm not saying that as a negative thing. I just think that's factual. The church has come out multiple times with Proposition 8, and even now, saying they are there for one man, one woman. And I feel like as a member of the church, if you're a baptized member of the church and you have your name on the record, you're a Mormon that's going against the church publicly. I don't know if there's a way to get around that.
Very interesting.
Yeah, and then I just want to say about Revelation. So many of us will say, and I've been in the same boat, of the thing that hurts me, and this is one of the things that's lost my testimony of Revelation, of, let's take the ordained women movement, for example. Again, I'm not an official ordained women person. I'm not on the website. At best, I'm kind of a sympathizer of their movement. I don't agree with everything that they've done. I don't agree with everything they say. But I do think they have a good point of saying, well, let's have a conversation. Let's ask. All that we're doing is asking for the prophet to ask this question. And I think that's fair. So say the bishop calls me in and calls me to be Young Men's president. It seems like a fair enough question for me to ask the bishop. Bishop, did you pray about this calling? Now, the bishop could say yes. He could say no. He could say, not specifically, but I talked about it in a bishopric meeting or something, right? But his answer ultimately is unimportant. I think what's important is that I'm free to ask the question because it's legitimate and the bishop can give whatever answer he wants. And then I just have to accept his answer from there and I'll say yes or no to the calling, right? I think it's the same with a stake president. I think if a stake president is called to be stake president, I think it's fine for him to ask the general authority, was this prayed about? I think that's a fine question. So why isn't this the same with a prophet? If the prophet is saying, or if the church is saying women can't hold priesthood, it seems if we have a prophet, because it seemed like this is what Joseph Smith or even Brigham Young would do, why doesn't President Monchin just stand up and just say, look, not one of the apostles, but the prophet, the person that's supposed to be getting revelation, the only one that's on the face of the earth today that's supposed to be getting revelation for the church, and stand up in General Conference and just say in two sentences, look, this is the policy of the church. I'm the prophet. I talk to God. Some people might think I'm sound crazy, but I'm not. But you can think whatever I want, but I'm a prophet. I speak to God. I'm God's representative on earth. And homosexuality is wrong. And gay marriage is wrong, and we shouldn't support it as a church or as a member of the church. And I'm telling you. It seems very easy, but instead we're getting press releases. All of a sudden church doctrines come from press releases, and we're getting apostles saying stuff, but where is the actual prophet? Why doesn't the prophet just stand up? And if there is no revelation on the matter, he could just stand up and say, I know there's been a lot of questions about this issue, and I just want to be up front. This is just the policy of the church. We think about it, but it's the policy. We haven't had any actual revelation on this. I mean, whatever answer he wants to give is fine. It's just confusing to me that why is the prophet silent? What good is a prophet if a prophet never speaks as a prophet? And so that's what's confusing to me, and it's really kind of I've really become kind of disenchanted with this idea of a modern prophet when the prophet's never standing up and claiming to speak on an issue that seems to be very big in the church. Right. And so people will come back and say, well, it's not like they can just reply to everything, or, you know, like, what, you just want the prophet to pray for everything and make a bunch of political statements? And my answer is no, not at all. But if it's a if it's in the New York Times and there's even non-Mormons thinking about it, I think Joseph Smith for sure would stand up and make a statement. That's what the Doctrine and Covenants is, right? He has statements about all kinds of things.
Yeah.
So Kirk, what are you going to be doing with the Mormon book review? Are you going to keep that going?
Yeah, it's kind of been on the down low for the past few months while a lot of kind of different things have been going on. But I'm definitely planning on keeping that going, not changing the tone of it at all. Already it's pretty academically focused. And yeah. It's my opinion's never really on there. So I feel like that's going to keep going on as usual. So I welcome new listeners to that, and I hope there are. And I will go on with my academic work as usual. So if anyone's out there listening who needs a teacher for something, call me, because I'm looking for a new teaching job.
Absolutely. And for listeners of Rational Faiths, it is a great podcast, and as we were talking about in the beginning, like, the back catalog has fascinating interviews, and it's just if you're into Mormon history, it's a great thing to check out. Kirk, I really appreciate you coming on and kind of discussing some of these different things. Do you have anything else that you'd like to bring up before we end the call?
Yeah, a lot of people have asked me, students have asked me this, because some of my ex-students have heard, and mostly students and non-students and friends, and have really given me support for the most part. There's been some negative reaction, but for the most part, I mean, people have been really loving and understanding, and I really appreciate that. A big question that I've gotten is, so were you lying in classes? Well, you know, because I've taught at the Institute and, you know, these things, and throughout the years, and people said, have you just been fooling people? Have you been lying? And my answer is no. I've always been very careful of my words. I've never testified of something in a class that I didn't believe. So let me be clear on that. I've never testified of things I didn't believe. Have I taught things that I didn't believe? Only as far as they were factual. So, for example, I might be teaching on Scripture, and I might be like, okay, let's look at the Book of Mormon here. What's this verse saying? What are some ways we could look at this? And, you know, as students would say stuff, I might say something like, okay, but the modern church teaches X, Y, and Z, so how might we try to fuse these two things, or how are some ways we can look at this? So maybe some examples I brought up I might not believe, but anything that I actually stood up and actively testified of, I've always believed. I've never once misled a student for me to believe something that I didn't believe, and I've always been very open if asked blunt questions about things. I've always thought, and same as when my church callings and when I'm in wards, I always feel like I should just be open with people. And then the second thing is, people have asked me, we didn't really see this coming. Where did this come from? And I would say I could talk to a very few people throughout the years, because the church has nothing in place at this point. And I hope podcasts like these and others, you know, continue to help people. But when you work for the church, something you have to have a temple recommend for, or you're a bishop or something like this, because bishops leave the church all the time, there's nobody to talk to. Because as soon as you question something, for example, if I work at for a church school, and I go to my bishop and I say, I don't know if the prophet is inspired, they could very well, like, take my temple recommend. Or if you're a bishop and you say, I don't know if the Book of Mormon is historically accurate, or I don't know if Joseph Smith's a prophet, they could just release you as bishop after a year, and then everybody's going to speculate about you. And so I think this is why so many times we see people be great bishops for 5 years, and they get released and leave the church a year later. Because at the time, you know, if you've been at BYU for 20 years, you can't very well say something negative or show your true feelings. You'll lose your whole livelihood. There's no place for people like me, I feel, who are kind of in the middle on things, who can still be great teachers and don't want to destroy the faith of people and want to be in the community. I feel that there's just nowhere for that person. And when these people are struggling, there's nobody for them to talk to, because these things are all or nothing. And so those are two common questions that I really get that I wanted to kind of address, because I feel like they might be on people's minds.
No, absolutely. What would it take for you to, I mean, maybe consider being rebaptized? I mean, you are considering continuing to attend and do these kind of things. And I think a lot of these issues that you're bringing up are some of these different practical concerns and that you bring up. So what would it take? Is there anything that you could see that would change your mind on this and would maybe lead you to being rebaptized?
I'm going to give you a very, very Mormon answer. The Spirit would have to tell me. I've never had any sort of spiritual experience telling me there's a prophet or that the institution's right. I've had a testimony of that on some level for a lot of time. My very Mormon answer is, I've had experiences praying about the Book of Mormon in my life, and not even just praying, but interactions with that book that have been very personal to me, that I feel are given by the Holy Spirit. That's how I interpret those. That might not be other people's experiences, but it's mine. The same with Joseph Smith. I've spent a lot of time with him. I have a lot of love and affection and things for Joseph. Do I agree with everything Joseph did? No, but a lot I can look past, because I believe that I have this love and this compassion and this kind of testimony of him. So I have this strong conviction of these things. I'm just not always sure what to do with it. If somebody is to hold a gun to my head, I couldn't in good faith deny the Book of Mormon. That it works wonders in my life, and I still read it all the time. Can I say that same thing about the 12 apostles, about the things that they say in General Conference? No. I don't get the same feelings, and I've prayed. My decision now has come with much praying for months, maybe even a year. I've prayed about the institution and what I should do, and I've never got a conviction to stay. I've never had this big booming, burning in the bosom feeling that we talk about with the modern leadership and with local leadership, and knowing that I'm being dealt with in ways that would be from God. I've never gotten that. And that's, some might say that's because I'm hard-hearted, but maybe I am. I can't say that I'm right. But at this point, I'd say I'm kind of like an agnostic Mormon who really does love the church, but can in good faith say that he has a testimony. I feel I felt the Spirit before, and I know what that's like. I believe God can answer prayers. And I have that of some things, and of others I don't. And so what would it take me to get back in? I give my very Mormon answer of, I'd need the Spirit to tell me. And it's not something I can come to intellectually or just rationally, because I say my testimony of the Book of Mormon is irrational. So I'm not somebody who says, yeah, everything's just intellectual to me, because I readily admit that my testimony of the Book of Mormon is solely based on my feelings.
Kirk, thank you so much for coming back on to the Rational Faiths podcast.
Thanks, Brian. And let me throw in one more thing and just say,
yeah, go ahead.
I've told my students this for years. Don't ever stay in the church for me. Don't ever lean on my testimony. And I say the same thing now. Just because I resign says nothing about the church being true or false or otherwise. I'm just one person that's insignificant, that's made a decision that I feel right with. But never base your decisions on, especially your own faith, on what another person may or may not believe. And with that, I'll just say thanks for having me on, Brian. It was great.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Kirk. Reach out.